Welcome back to the Lead Lamp Podcast, where we bring on local influencers and just local movers and shakers and just learn a little bit more about them. It's not necessarily about your business. It's just kind of what you're doing in the community and everything else. So this week, we got Mike Verber, Dr. Mike Verber on the show, and you're a busy man. So we've got a lot to cover, but you know, we know a lot about you, but we want to kind of just kind of give your backstory to the community and just learn about where Dr. Verber started out and where he came from.
Well, I'm a hometown boy. So, you know, I love this area. I grew up in the area. I ended up going to school at Dickinson College and then dental school at Temple Dental and have moved back here. I don't think there was ever any question that I didn't want to be a part of this community, part of Cumberland Valley School District, which I'm very involved in. And, you know, it's come full circle. A lot of things that my parents were involved in that my parents did, I am now involved in. I love this area so much. I kind of tease my wife and kids. They want to go to spring break. They want to go to Florida or travel or see Europe. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I love everything about this area.
You're always the.
I don't even like to get on a plane to go anywhere. I love everything the area has to offer.
The staycation guy.
I'm the staycation guy. Although my wife says I don't ever really do that because I can't put down work completely. But my mom and dad moved to this area because my dad was from upstate New York and my mom was from Virginia. So this was like a compromise. So they put down roots here and my dad had a dental practice and I ended up going into practice with him and then things kind of grew from there. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were growing up in the dental practice, was it all your brothers and you guys hanging out where your dad and mom worked?
Well, so, you know,
I'm sure they put you to work. No, you've told me some stories. Pulling weeds, you were pulling
my dad.
Weeds
yeah, my dad used to say I was allergic to work because we would go to the office and it was a little kind of row home where the lower level was converted to an office and the second level was an apartment. And my dad would make us do landscaping. And my middle brother, I was the oldest, the one that was just a bit younger than me. Would go with my dad and I, and he was a good like worker. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure it wasn't that I was a good worker, but I always would try to think of a better way to do it. So he'd get down and start pulling weeds and I'd be thinking about, you know, how can we do this differently? And I would come home and I'd always get poison ivy. And my mom would yell at him for taking me to do the landscaping. And my dad would say, dang it, he's not allergic to poison ivy. He's allergic to work. But it was just a different kind of work. I would go in and mess around in the dental office a little bit. But really, I don't feel like they ever pushed that on us. The question about being in the office, when they first moved here, we lived in the apartment above. My mom, my dad, and I for a few years. So they opened their office in 1974. I was then born in 1976, and I think they moved out a couple years later. But we still have patients that will say, I remember you running around the office in diapers. I guess I used to sneak down the stairs and run and try to go see my dad.
Run rampant.
Working. Yeah.
That's too funny. So you said 1974, and we're going to kind of go into what you do now. So this is a big year for Verber Family Dentistry and Verber Dental Group because, you know, and we could talk about what you do now too, because it's interesting. It's not just dentistry, but it's the 50th year anniversary of Verber Family Dentistry, which is huge.
Yeah. I think that's something that our team should be really proud of. You know, dentistry has gone through a tremendous amount of change. There are fewer and fewer small solo practitioner, doctor-owned practices. And the what's filling the void is larger venture capital backed corporations that are, you know, they might be owned. I mean, the big one used to be owned by a foreign hedge fund. So, you know,
they're not all Aspen Dental. So they all look the same.
They might be, you know, named after the location or keeping the name of the previous dentist, but that doesn't mean the ownership is there. Mm-hmm. So, there were a lot of dentists that were second generation dentists or even third generation dentists. And I believe we're the last one that's still a locally doctor owned practice that's around. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because over the years, a lot of them have called us and asked if we would be interested in merging or buying them. But I think that is something that motivates our team is they, you know, we see ourselves as the stewards of dentistry in the area. And we're not sure that anybody else is going to do as good of a job as we can because we're from the community we care.
Right. So as the CEO of Verber Dental Group, kind of walk us through, you know, what you do now. We'll go into your journey a little bit later, but kind of what's your day-to-day like at Verber Dental Group and dealing with, you know, the size of the group that we have now?
Yeah, so I've learned, you know, there was a time where things got really complicated and we thought we needed to bring in some more experienced executive help. And it took a turn, like kind of in a direction I don't think the team or the partners really wanted. So I kind of stepped into the more actively managing as CEO of the organization from a business sense. Although I still see patients 2 days a week because I absolutely, you know, love that. And I think it keeps me grounded. But I've learned that being a CEO is a lot different than what I necessarily imagined it. I realized that over the years I've been a pretty good entrepreneur. But being a CEO of an organization that has 250 people and is of the size we are now is a kind of a different role. I kind of say being an entrepreneur is like being a bull. You got to charge ahead and you got to, you know, really take some risks and be, you know, persistent with things. Being a CEO is kind of like being the matador. So, you know, I wrote down like, what does my job entail? Cause I had to reflect on that recently. And I think, you know, there's a few things. One, making sure you have the right people in the right seats. You know, finding a guy like you is always a good thing. And you've done a great job with us. Making sure you have the right culture, making sure you have the right vision, networking and building relationships, being the public face of the company where that's necessary. And then, you know, also making sure you're paying attention to the numbers. So I'm not sure I was always a good numbers guy. I've gotten a lot better at that. But knowing what the numbers, and it's not just money, it's a measurement of how well you're executing. So making sure you're identifying the numbers or the key performance indicators that measure the company's performance, and then making sure we're driving those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been even over the last 4 years, it's been a cool thing to watch that change and grow. So it's even so
probably far. Probably a little traumatic too for you.
Yeah, well, COVID. You've been through a few.
Yeah. COVID was interesting.
It's been a roller coaster, but it's been good. And it's, you know, it's cool to watch it grow the way it has. Yeah. So, you know, I know some of the bumps in the roads that we've seen in the last 4 years, just with the economy and with COVID and you name
it. We should probably explain, you know, you came into the organization helping with marketing and we're promoted to being our marketing director. And you now you wear so many hats now. You're the director of marketing, IT and data, as well as being, you know, our executive director and one of the owners of Leadlamp Media. So you have been at the table for in the war room, sometimes we describe it depending on the circumstances.
I don't want to go back to the war room.
For quite a few.
Yeah. I think I showed you the other week, I have the old, whenever everything was shutting down, I have the old post-its that we had all around that wall. And I was like, I can't throw these out. Like it's just like it needs to go in an archive, a Verber archive somewhere.
Yeah. We had a boardroom that we had a group of people, our directors and myself and a partner or two that would meet to decide what to do on a daily basis.
It was literally daily, or hourly.
Yeah. Cause things are changing so fast. When you look back on that, you know, hindsight being 2020, like what was your, what's your takeaway? Like, what would you have done differently?
Yeah. So I don't know if you could Monday morning quarterback that situation, but what was crazy for me was I went from just like basically like a marketing manager in an hour. You guys came back upstairs and you're like, Brett, we need you. And I walked into the room and you're like, so you're the director now and we're going to make decisions here that are like a lot bigger than what they were an hour ago. Cause that was like the day before Tom Wolf came on and closed everything.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to kind of be on that fast track of like, okay, well now we got to make some decisions and we don't know what the right answer is or isn't. We just got to make a decision because we can't sit idle in this time.
I mean, the implications were crazy. You know, first of all, we're one of the first dental offices to close because we didn't know what was going on there. And also dentistry was being described as the most dangerous profession in the world because when we go in and we treat a patient, we're blowing air and water and creating these aerosols. So we knew it was very safe for the patients, but for our workers in the aerosols that were created
at the time,
from
the we didn't know.
Now it turns out it was a very safe environment because we knew how to handle infectious disease, the masks and the disinfectants in the air, things that we've always done worked very well, but we just didn't know.
The clinical staff was preparing.
They were talking about COVID living for, you know, 12 decades on surfaces and stuff, but
we went through a lot of cavity wipes.
Yeah, we thought the right thing. We thought the right thing to do was close, so we closed. Yeah. And then, you know, now we're taking care of, you know, hundreds of employees and families, and you know, we were the, you know, we're providing their insurance and their income, and it was before we knew what, you know, kind of government support was going to be there. We, you know, we didn't anticipate enhanced unemployment or the funding. So, I mean, it was these really big decisions that we were.
I think we navigated it well, though, because, and the group navigated it well at the time, because if you look back at it, you know, we brought almost everyone back. It was a very short amount of time that everyone was out in hindsight. At the time, we didn't know how long it was going to be, but, like, you know, we managed it pretty well and everyone came back pretty quickly. And the team as a whole came back, you know, pretty much unscathed. Yeah. So it was pretty awesome.
We came back. I think we were definitely in a good position coming back. You know, I think the roller coaster and getting spun in some different directions with some things that may or may not have been related to COVID is what's turned us around and made things so difficult. But, like, if I look back on that, and I think the thing I would do differently is only meet weekly. We were literally meeting
Zoom calls
every day.
8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And,
Zoom
and
call.
And every day things were changing.
Yeah.
Remember, like, new guidance was coming out with dentistry almost on the daily. And, you know, what do we do with this loan? And, you know,
you didn't know, though.
I mean, you didn't know. Like, we thought, okay, this was going to be it. But dang, they changed it again. I would have just probably met less and kind of let things play out a little more. We were so good about staying ahead of things, but, you know, sometimes maybe to our detriment a little bit.
Yeah, we came through it, though.
My dad had, my dad, who most of our the folks that have been with us a while kind of know pretty well, you know, he has a thing that he says, you always worry about the wrong thing. So, and I think I've shared that about with you because you like to worry. Yeah, nervous Nelly, but you always worry about the wrong thing. And, you know, that when you're meeting every day, you're probably worrying about the wrong thing.
Yeah. It was like hyper-focus, but it worked. Yeah. It's what we had to
survived. We're still here.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back on track. So what do you think was the back onto dentistry? What made, short of your dad being a dentist as well, like, what made you decide, and what was that moment where you were like, this is cool, like, this is what I want to do? You know, being a doctor obviously comes with other benefits as far as salaries and everything else, but, like, dentistry itself, there's got to be something that's ticking that keeps you wanting to provide that service and care to people. So, like, what is that that fuels that engine for you?
Well, you know, so dentistry, I was reluctant, you know, I think to do what my dad did. I was reluctant just to follow in his footsteps. So I went to school, and in the back of my mind, I said, you know, dentistry is going to be an option. But I was actually a history major. So I was thinking, well, maybe I'll become a professor, or maybe I'll go into law or law enforcement, actually, was something I was thinking about. And I kept trying on these different things, and nothing really stuck. So, like, around the end of my sophomore year in college, I said, well, let's make the plan dentistry and see if that sticks. And it just did. You know, there's so many different aspects to it that I think, you know, there's the design aspect and the I love, you know, seeing the patients and working with staff closely. And I love the idea that I can see what I accomplish at the end of the day. You know, like, you do a lot of, when I'm doing the business side of things, you're sending out these emails, you're making these plans. It just takes a long time to put points on the board. Whereas in dentistry, you know, people go home and you can just really see what we've accomplished. But the other thing is, dentistry demands that you're hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. So that hyper-focus, it's the only time my brain is not going, you know, 8 million miles an hour. So like, when I'm at work and I'm doing dentistry and I'm hyper-focused, it's relaxing for me.
It's almost like an artist where they say, you know, when they're painting or they're doing whatever, they're shutting off everything else. And now they're just working on, that's their piece of art. Yeah. And it really is what you do too, is a work of art too, with people's smiles and how you can turn, you know, there's a lot of cases. We have them as examples on the websites, is people who feel like they're in, you know, dire straits with their smile. And then 6 months, a year later, have like, you know, these cases.
We're just so beautiful. We're so fortunate that regardless of what the patient comes in, I can create the smile that they want, because, you know, I work in a specialty center where we have excellent surgeons that can do implant stuff. And we could put people under general anesthesia. We can, you know, do the gums because we have the periodontist. I have the endodontist there. Like, I'm really living in a dental dreamland. But the other thing is, we have our own dental lab. So I work very closely with them. And my wife is one of, we have a couple really good, a number of really good designers and good porcelain techs and good denture techs. But my wife does a lot of the designing. So everything's kind of computer driven. And she's a phenomenal artist. So I just love working on cases with her and the other techs. But there's a story there. So Kelly and I have always worked well together. At least I think we work well together. Maybe she wants to get a little space sometimes, but my mom used to do all the books for the office. She used to do the business side of things and pay some of the bills. So, Kelly was an x-ray technician that worked in a hospital and a trauma center. And when she was pregnant with our first daughter, Vivian, she was called out in the middle of the night in a snowstorm. And I say, yeah, I don't think this is going to work. Why don't, you know, my mom wanted to kind of slow down. Why don't you take my mom's job? So there was two or three dentists at the time. And, you know, it was something that, you know, the idea was she can work part time and, you know, be home a little bit with the kids and stuff. Of course, then we started growing. So I said, well, now you're our CFO.
Still VFD.
Yeah, we were still at the one office. But I think that ran through till we got to three or four offices. But so she was doing all the business side of stuff in the HR and all this. I mean, basically her and I were managing all the administrative stuff. And
well, that's a lot of small businesses go through that, where you have the wife or a family member doing bookkeeping and all these other things. And once you hit that, there's that threshold, there's a tipping point where you realize, okay, now it's not that Kelly couldn't or shouldn't be doing it, but it's too much now.
Well, we don't know what, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
Right. So you think you're doing HR right. You're not. You're doing it completely wrong. You're thinking you're doing finance right. You're not. You're doing it completely wrong. But yes, that was one of the more difficult things, where we were five or six dentists, but we couldn't afford administrative help yet. And those were the days where I was working till 7 or 8 o'clock every night. You know, I wasn't home to see my kids at dinner or anything. That was, you know, that's the big sacrifice you make to get there. And now we're there and we do have that kind of help. But we were coming home from the beach one year, and we had a week off, and I was all excited to get back to work. I love what I do. And I'm telling Kelly, and she's just sitting there, and I guess I'm completely oblivious to the fact that she's not excited to get back to work. So she breaks up bawling, crying, really upset, like has to pull the car over. She always drives, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm a better passenger than she is, and she's a better driver than I am, but she pulls the car over. And I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, I hate my job. And I'm like, well, okay. You know, at least it's not that, you know, at least you don't hate your marriage. It's just the work. So we moved her to become a dental assistant. She was having some back issues. So we said, well, why don't you try doing some lab work? And she started doing some things, and then the pandemic happened, and she was doing chalk drawings on the driveway, just to entertain the neighbors that were walking. And she, like, it was like, holy mackerel, she's like amazing. So we moved her into doing the design stuff. And she still does some of the chalk drawings, but she does a lot of the artistic outlets with designing smiles.
Yeah, I remember the lab growth even over the last 4 years. And it's tremendous to see that, because it went from a dinky little tiny room. You had the other Brett was in there. It was a tight little room. And now they have that whole, they've kicked us out of the basement where marketing used to be. And now it floods the whole basement practically.
Yeah. The lab has been great because it really allows us control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can deliver the kind of, you know, we're not getting our crowns from China. Not that that necessarily is a horrible crown, but it's, you know, we can deliver the kind of work that we want to work, do for our patients. But it also allows me, I work with the lab, I'm able to go in and look at the work that's being done in our offices. And if there's something that, you know, we can improve, we can work with the dentists or the assistants or our team members to
monitor. You can train
quality control.
Yeah.
We see what's happening in the offices that way.
Yeah. And it's nice to also, when you have your more extensive cases, be there and actually communicate directly with whatever needs done versus, you know, lines of communications overseas or even across the country.
Yeah, our lab techs will come into the offices.
They deliver right there, yeah.
They deliver, but they also come in for some of the procedures. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they meet the patients, understand what the patient wants. It's great.
Okay, so let's pivot again. So back to, like, you know, Dr. Verber and what you've built. Obviously, people in our community in the Cumberland Valley area know, you know, this dental, not an empire, but this dental group that we have is now big. And I think a lot of people don't realize, when they first start going to one of our practices, you know, they go to Search Dental or they go somewhere else and they think it's part of Search, it's Search Dental. And then they realize, oh wow, this is actually a larger group. There's a huge benefit to the patients with that as well. Mm-hmm. Not having to be jostled around and referred to other offices for specialty stuff and anything else they want.
Yeah. So our vision, you know, and this,
yeah, kind of talk about that inspiration of, because I've heard that story of, you know, Mac and how you wanted to provide that, but that was for pediatric dentistry. But really, I think that folds into everything.
Yeah. You know, Mac is a little boy that couldn't get the help he needed in the area. And there's other patients that way, or there's frustrations where we were working with some specialists outside the group, oral surgeons, where, you know, just the costs and the redundancy and the communication was so difficult. So I think, you know, my partners and I looked at this and said, you know, this dentistry is broken. Mm-hmm. Like, this could be better. And it's remarkable that it's not. Like, we have what we call a dental health system. You know, the big dental companies, they don't connect offices. They're not really collaborative. They're doing business economies of scale, whether it's leveraging buying power.
They're connected at the bank.
They're connected, but they're not exactly. The shareholders are connecting them. They're not connected. One office owned by, you know, a big dental corporation might be competing with another office that's 2 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. So rather than business economies of scale, we always focused on clinical economies of scale for our patients. So if a patient comes in to, you know, get their teeth cleaned, and then they find that they need something that might involve a root canal doctor, an endodontist, or a periodontist, or an oral surgeon, or a prosthetist, you know, so, or an orthodontist, we have all that, and it's all the same dental health records. So mm-hmm. No matter what office you're at, the specialist
it's available.
Can look up at the x-rays that were taken at that hygiene exam or read the hygienist notes. So it definitely drives a higher quality of care, I believe. You know, it's super convenient for the patient. Mm-hmm. You know, they love not having to go fill out 17 new forms and all that kind of stuff. We could schedule them right into the, you know, they don't have to call to make the scheduling. But the other unique thing is that we are, you know, there's nobody that owns a part of this group that isn't seeing patients. Mm-hmm. So, and myself included. So I definitely think the decisions that we make are grounded in what it's going to be for the patients and for the team working in the office.
Clinical care and patient care first. And then
we actually say it's team first.
Team first. Yeah.
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 Which was a paradigm shift for us. But, you know, I finally understood that, you know, I could say, hey, we're going to be patient first, but the care that the patient gets is going to be dependent on the team. Mm-hmm. So if you can keep good team members and recruit and retain good team members, the care to the patients is going to be
right
there.
But it is refreshing knowing that the people at the table making business decisions are doing so without having to sacrifice patient care. So, it's a fantastic model to see and learn more about, when you see that most companies are going the other direction and they're just going by the bottom line for everything.
Yeah. And it's a difficult environment. So I don't, you know, I understand where they're struggling, but yeah.
So back on to Dr. Verber, say, what are some values that you think that you have that carry well through, you know, what the organization reflects as well? So things that, you know, you live your life by that you like to see executed and are executed well within your group.
Well, you know, I'm starting to understand that it can't just be my values. Right. Like that it has to be my partner's values and our team's values. So, you know, I am so passionate about the community, and I think those values are shared in there. But I'm also kind of I'm very persistent, and I'm a workaholic, and I don't give up on things, and I tolerate a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not all of my partners want to take every risk and go after every opportunity, and even, you know, if it means that we're going to have to work 7 days a week. I'm recognizing that there are people that want to do those things, and there are people that want to work 3 days a week and are in a position to do so. Mm-hmm. And, we can do that for everybody, but it's going to require some organizational balance. So mm-hmm. I'm definitely, learning that, but you know, I think the core values that we have as a company at Verber Dental Group, which are, you know, empower, be positive, and be kind. Mm-hmm. I'm a very positive person, and I love the idea of empowering people. So, you know, aside from the dental group having partners that are providers that work here, one of the things that I'm most pleased about is like Lead Lamp Media. So Lead Lamp Media started as a few great employees of Verber Dental Group. We realized how great you were. We started your own company, and look at where you're taking it. It's mm-hmm. amazing. So to be partners with you and with the other folks at Lead Lamp Media, to empower people that way. We've done the same thing with a real estate management company, and where we have a number of different properties that some of our employees are invested in. You and I are real estate partners.
Yep.
So those are things that I think I love, and that's the empower part. And then the be kind, you know, that's something I think I'm a good person, but sometimes I have to focus on the kindness. Like I in the past have been a very direct person. Like if I don't like something, I just tell you, and mm-hmm. We can have a fight, and I'm like, we're going to have a fight so we can get to the bottom of it and figure out what's the best thing. But I think sometimes it's too aggressive for some people. Like, mm-hmm. You've seen me take more aggressive stance. And I think that can be scarring for some people. So I'm realizing there's a softer approach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's,
there's a time and a place for all of that though.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. But sometimes telling it like it is, sometimes dialing things down.
When you learn
and going a little bit more gradually,
learn you can get your way, or not get your way, but you can get to the end result of what needs to be done, not just through brute force. Then as an organization, I think we're learning too that there's other ways to do the same thing.
Yeah, I love a good argument. Mm-hmm. Because I want you to change my mind. You know what I mean? Like I think things are a certain way, and I want to have a confrontation, and I feel like the best result will be yielded from that. But what I'm learning is, first of all, I'm the CEO of the company, right? Mm-hmm. So I have this advantage, the scales aren't balanced to begin with. And then, I'm 6'6", I'm 360 pounds. I argue well, I'm loud. And, I look back and I go, shit, that wasn't a fair fight. Like, mm-hmm. did I miss something because I wasn't listening? So kindness is a very important approach, because, I am listening better, and I do, hopefully. And I realize I'm changing my mind a little bit.
I think the key there for everyone is just listening better for anybody. Like if you just take time, my wife would probably say I need to do a better job of that all the time, but like just listening to anyone, whether it's a family member, a friend, someone you work with, that can usually solve or get to the root of the problem quicker than, doing it the harder way.
Yeah. And not having to make, I like to be deliberate and make, mm-hmm. expedite decisions, but kind of slowing down a little bit too. So, I found like a lot of times I'd have this argument and then I'd lay in bed thinking about it. And then I'd realize, oh, that was the point that somebody was making, or, oh, I get it. And then I come back and change it. And, I think people would appreciate that. But the problem was like the trauma of the argument for some people. Yeah. I was having a great time with it. I love a good fight.
You're a debate guy.
Yeah.
Now, did you debate Were you like, did you do debates in school or were you a debater even when you were younger? Would you just, you would lock
well, I think if you asked most of my teachers, they would say I was debating them all along, but I was never formally in debate club.
Okay. Know? Okay.
I think I was always debating.
That's fair. So let's talk about that while we're on there. So what do you think when you look back at, you know, what you've done now, your 10-year-old self or the child version of yourself would think about, you know, where you're at, whether it's professionally or where you're at with your family, anything like that, you know, that
well,
reflection.
I think the first thing they'd say is, shit, we didn't lose the baby fat. Although I did for a while when I was playing sports. But no, I think, you know, it's an interesting way to put that question because when I was 10 years old, I'm not sure I was, you know, concerned about anything beyond Twinkies and
yeah, that's true.
like doing the moonwalk like Michael Jackson. But I think I am over the moon with where I'm at and very fortunate with my life. I've, you know, I think I've gotten to where I'm at because I've just had, I've had incredible parents that were super supportive. I've had incredible mentors along the way. I mean, some of the most famous dentists in the world, just by luck, I've come to teach with or be around and learn from. So that's changed my career drastically. And then I just have had like, you know, I have the greatest wife in the world for me. You know, she's just amazing the way she's supported me and all that. So, you know, my wife and Kelly and I were watching Sopranos. Mm. She'd never seen it.
Which is an awesome
series. Great show. She's never seen it. But of course it's the story of this mob boss that has kind of some you know mental breakdown and starts to see a therapist. So she sees the first episode and the Tony Soprano, the mob boss, is in his backyard grilling, families around, and there's the ducks in the pond. And he's so happy. And then the ducks leave and that's what starts like the spiral of depression. So I think I didn't have the depression moment yet, but I came home the other day and we moved, we renovated a house and it's, you know, it's everything I've always wanted. And it's got a little bit of space and, you know, I have two daughters, Vivian and Charlie, that are just doing really well, 7th and 8th grade. And they're just, I mean, I love being around them. But I pull into this and it had just snowed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like the first snow in 2 years. I pull into my driveway and kind of have this long driveway. And right there, like on my driveway, there's like 4 or 5 really big deer just standing there. And like, I'm like the headlights, like I'm 10 yards away from them. The headlights, they're just looking at me. And it's like, it was kind of like that Tony Soprano duck moment. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, oh my God, this is like, how freaking lucky am I to be living here, to come home to this? And then, you know, then I open the door and Rudy, my dog, runs out and chases the deer and he's barking like a madman. And, you know, my kids are home, you know, we're eating dinner. Like everything is just, just there. And then professionally, you know, it's what my partners and team have been able to do. I mean, I feel really, really good about it. It's been hard. I mean, these last 3 years have been very, very difficult. I mean, I feel like, you know, from a business sense, it's been really, really difficult. But, you know, I sat down with my one partner the other day and we were having lunch and you know, we were talking about, you know, financially, the costs going up and, you know, insurance reimbursements has been very stagnant. Like, how are we, you know, what are we going to do? And I, you know, I said, you know, even if we don't financially ever, you know, realize the benefits of ownership, like at the end of the day, you know, as long as we can kind of continue to do what we're doing here, at the end of the day, you got to feel great about you know, what we've done, you know, for our community and for our team and for our patients. So
yeah,
it's exceeded my expectations.
Yeah. 10-year-old might be too young to think about that, but it is,
it's a good question.
It's a good question to get you thinking.
What did you want to do when you're 10 years old?
This is really geeky and you're probably not going to be surprised, but I wanted to be an architect from like 10, like young. I was blown away by like architectural drawings and things like that. So you probably aren't surprised because that's how my brain's wired.
Well, you build analytical. All those little model things and everything that are crazy, amazing. I'm always amazed about all the different talents.
I think that's what set me off on
that. But architect was on my list for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I just didn't, you know, it didn't stick because I didn't have like a clear path on how to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in a liberal arts college, I was at Dickinson. But you know, when we build buildings, I love getting in there and drawing things and doing,
and you design. Like to get involved in like the colors and design selection. And you do a good job of it. It's when the offices are finished, they are almost breathtaking when you walk into them. So it's, and the hard part about this now is you have to make the next one better than the last one. Or, you know, not, you don't have to, but like it becomes a challenge of like, okay, what are we going to do with this next office? So it's been fun to watch those designs come together.
Yeah. That's another lesson I'm learning though too. Yeah. It's like, not everything can be a home run.
Does that have to be
like, you know, Ritz-Carlton. You keep trying to outdo yourself. Yeah. But it's been,
okay.
It's been, you know, I think I've been afforded an opportunity to do a lot, follow different passions. So like that's building things is definitely something I've liked to do.
Not just building things physically, but building things as a business. It's not always material, but you're good at building organizations or groups of people as well, and assembling the right teams. Might take a journey to get there, but we get to the right teams on a lot of those practices and businesses we've, you know, started up. But the other thing that I think, you know, I wanted to tap into, and we've talked about this before too, but if you have advice for people that are out there that are just kind of on the fence about starting something, you know, you're pretty aggressive, as you said, with starting businesses or running with ideas, but what's something that you would tell someone almost like myself who tends to be a little bit more conservative, if they have an idea, is just like, you know, get started and do that thing. Cause you know, next year is always a better time in your head now, but next year you probably will wish you started. So you're a good example of that because you just go right into it. So what would you tell someone in that situation?
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. You know, again, getting back to my parents, it's unfair for me to kind of just say, go all out.
Yeah.
Because I had this safety net. You know, my dad was a dentist and, you know, they were by no means like crazy wealthy. But there were times where I swung and missed and, you know, I didn't feel the pain because I had a backstop there. But, you know, calculated, you got to take risk. I mean, I think we fail to realize how much runway we have ahead of us. Mm-hmm. You know, like your mistakes become experience. It just becomes more valuable. I mean, I've had businesses that I put hundreds of thousands of dollars into and failed in no time, in months, you know? And I mean, I remember there was one business, it was a dental whitening distributor and teeth whitening. And, you know, we probably lost $100,000, but I remember I sat down and I wrote 50 lessons. I said, what are the 50 things I learned here? Mm-hmm. I don't think I sat down saying 50, but it turned out to be 50. I mean, and I feel like that made me a better business person, mm-hmm. but you know, and it's not for everybody.
Right.
You know, there are people that are just going to be happier, you know, waking up in the morning, doing something that they're passionate about during the day and then going home and not worrying about it. When you own a business, you're working all the time. Even mm-hmm. when you're with your family, you're thinking about it,
yep.
right?
Yep.
But if that's what you want to do, there's nothing more satisfying. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would say, you know, first understand what your purpose is. You know, I think clearly I wanted to come and impact my community using, you know, dentistry, not only through dentistry, but building an organization that can impact the community.
It became a tool.
Yeah, it definitely has. And then, you know, I think if you have a purpose, then you need to make a vision, you know, so, you know, map that out. What does it look like? And then I think you take, you know, we have brand promises. So what, you know, how are we going to do what we set out to do? Mm-hmm. You know, one of our number one brand promise is relationships first. So, you know, we're very particular about who we buy from. We don't buy the cheapest gloves. We buy the gloves from the people that we have a good relationship with. So, you know, what are your brand promises and what are your core values? So the brand promises are more for the external stuff. Like, how are you going to treat your customers? How are you going to treat the people you're interacting with outside the organization? Mm-hmm. Your core values are what's inside the organization. And then after that, just persistence.
Keep going back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to be persistent.
Okay. Do you have anything else you wanted to share? I mean, I appreciate, we could probably go on for another hour and a half or more just about, you know, things we've learned and gone along the way, even on the last 4 or 5 years, but any closing thoughts or arguments? You know, don't argue. We're not arguing. Yeah.
But, we could argue now.
Any closing thoughts you just had before we wrap up?
It's people and numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always so people oriented. And I realized that if you don't take care of the numbers, you can't take care of the people. Mm-hmm. But if you don't take care of the people, you're not gonna have any numbers.
It's like a seesaw.
Yeah.
You have to have a good balance on that.
But I've just been very fortunate. You know, like I think meeting Kelly, you know, it's the one piece of advice they don't give you in business school is, you know, choose your life partner really closely. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can be successful. You can't be successful with the wrong partner.
It's a bad foundation to build on then. So, and I feel the same way now. You know, we're 2 years now into Lead Lamp, and you know, Kristen has dealt with plenty of me, you know, missing a couple things, doing work at the table when I should be eating dinner, whatever it is. And she knows, you know, it's a sacrifice, but you know, you have to also have that moment where they step in and go, all right, you're closing that. Exactly. And we're going to go to basketball, or we're going to go to kids' dance recital. Cause like, she has to be my balance on the other side of it, going like, you're done today.
Yeah. I think our wives are similar, and you know, there are motivation mm-hmm. for wanting to be great and do things. They're also willing to sacrifice, but then they're also, you know, like my wife raised my kids until they were five. You know, I got to the point where now I'm very active as a father, but until they were 5 years old and we were building that company, you know, I wasn't around. She took that sacrifice. But at the same time, then they're the rumble strips that keep you mm-hmm. on course.
It's a danger.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And then just, you know, make sure you're working with, you know, I have been so fortunate in the office and on the business side to work with, you know, just really great people. So,
Right people,
yeah.
Right place. Cool. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
For your time today.